Please remember, the views and opinions expressed by this show or any other show on DV Radio and its guests are strictly those of said individuals and do not reflect those of the DV Radio staff, nor the staff of Dysfunctional Veterans.
Let's go to war, baby!
All I know is war, all I know is shoot. All I want is more. I'm a soldier, I'm a warrior. Got a emblem on my cover. And ask me what I did for ya. I put the trash deep down under. Yeah, I'm a dog of war. Hell's what I've been through. I'm a dog of war. I did it all for you, yeah.
Welcome back to the War Dog Trail. This is episode 9. In this episode, I'd like to continue with my own personal combat history, my own walk down the War Dog Trail. If you recall from episode 1, I became a Marine in 2002. I entered the Fleet Marine Force in November or December 2002. I was flown out west to California after finishing the School of Infantry in North Carolina. And I was assigned to the 1st Marine Division. Now, normally, all Marines east of the Mississippi River are stationed at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, which is our East Coast base. Those that live west of the Mississippi River are usually stationed in California at either Camp Pendleton or 29 Palms. So the fact that my entire infantry class was pulled from North Carolina and sent out to 29 Palms, California, and the 1st Marine Division was unique in itself. Because we all figured we would graduate from SOI, from School of Infantry, as grunts, and we just had a few more miles down the road and we'd end up living, training, and becoming a part of units stationed at Camp Lejeune. However, we're flown out west to the Pure Desert. And I mean 900 square miles of wide open desert for the Marines to train in. We're talking summertime heat temps that can reach, 110, if not more. I specifically remember it could get so hot there that back when VHS tapes were still around, they would always warn you at the local, video rental places never to leave a video in the car or a VHS tape in your car during the summer, because the heat itself would just melt the tape and all of your movie footage on the actual videos. So I arrived in 29 Palms, got to my unit, 3-4, 3rd Battalion, 4th Marines. I was assigned to 1st Platoon. 29 Palms, for a guy from the East Coast, can be a serious awakening. You got to get acclimatized. You've been training, in South Carolina for boot camp, in North Carolina to become a grunt. Now you're thrust into a pure desert environment. So I eventually got acclimatized to one of my first field op with the unit, which happened to be called Steel Knight. That lasted 2 weeks or so. And this is the type of operation where you fully get to appreciate the power and strength of the Marine Corps. You get to commence training in with full combined arms exercises, where you have your grunts, me, the infantry guys on the ground, but we also are being supported by the tanks, the planes, the amphibious assault vehicles, the AAVs, which transport the grunts. You get to see a full display of warfare and what we are capable of doing as a fighting force in 29 Palms, because as I said before, you have 900 square miles of desert space to just, you know, shoot, blow things up, train, practice defending or assaulting any objective given to us. About a month after that, January 2003, my entire unit received orders to report to Kuwait in lieu of the Iraq War and Operation Iraqi Freedom. When I left the country, I was 18, and I happened to be a SAW gunner. SAW, S-A-W, is a squad automatic weapon, the M249. It's a pure automatic machine gun. You're firing linked and belt-fed 5.56 rounds, which the civilian equivalent would be 223 rounds. I left the country as an 18-year-old SAW gunner in January 03. Most notably, I'm an Oakland Raiders fan. And of course, now this year, 2020, we're actually moving to Las Vegas. So I guess for the first time, I'll say I'm now a Las Vegas Raiders fan. The Raiders made it to the Super Bowl that year at the end of, the beginning of 03. Super Bowl between the Tampa Bay Bucks and the Raiders. And sadly to say, man, because we were in Kuwait by then, I didn't find out who won that Super Bowl, man, probably until 3 to 4 weeks after the fact. By February of 03, I turned 19. And in March of 03, we began the Iraq War. The night before the war began, I can never forget waiting at the Iraq-Kuwait border with the entire 1st Marine Division and watching and hearing 10 hours of planes dropping bombs on the enemy that waited for us at the border. And when I'm talking numbers, there was an intel report that went out, as I've said in previous episodes, that there were 250 Iraqi tanks waiting for us. And in addition to that, there was always the threat of, you know, being attacked with chemicals, VX gas, and a number of things that Saddam and his crew could have got a hold of. And we did end up going through several times where, you know, the call was given out, gas, 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 which immediately means all Marines need to don and clear, be wearing their gas masks within 9 seconds. That is, or that was the standard at the time. Now, there was once even an Iraqi Scud missile fired at us while we waited at the border. But I am proud to say that the Patriot missile, which I think is made by Lockheed Martin, the Patriot was able to intercept that Scud mid-flight and blow it up there. Because, you know, we didn't know if it was armed with chemical warheads or not or anything else. But there's no telling how many Marine lives that Patriot missile saved as we waited for the border, or as we waited at the border. There are things from each of these tours that I'll delve into in subsequent episodes, where I'll go into specifics, you know, firefights, cities, that sort of thing. But the basic gist of it is that my unit, 3-4, was the unit that made it into Baghdad first, and we were the ones that pulled down Saddam's statue. As we traveled, we had reporters embedded with us from Time, Time Magazine, San Francisco Chronicle, and later on, a few years down the road, I want to say the Chicago Tribune, during my third tour, did come out to Fallujah and interview us about being the first unit from the Department of Defense that was being sent to Iraq for our third time. So yeah, for me, I ended up turning 19, 20, and 21. Either on my way to Iraq, in Iraq, or on my way back to Iraq. Now, the only thing I want to bring up from this first tour is the book, or the picture, or the bridge. On April 6th, maybe it was the 7th of 2003. As we fought our way into Baghdad, we entered, or we crossed the Diyala River, and we had to, as a unit, cross the Diyala Bridge. But the Iraqis blew a hole in the center of that bridge to impede our forward advance on capturing the capital. So, I will probably never forget, as well as all the Marines that I served with in 3-4 Kilo Company, when we assaulted that bridge. And somehow for me, a photojournalist that happened to be near us or embedded with us snapped my picture as I was crossing the bridge and passing a dead Iraqi enemy combatant. And that individual happened to also have some sort of explosives strapped to his, or hidden under his clothes, but tied to his chest in a bandolier or a carrier, or a pouch to carry. So here I am, 19 years old. As much as things are being said and going on about, you know, Al-Qaeda or terrorists, I now have a picture in a book of me next to a dead Iraqi man. And that book is The War in Iraq, Photo History, page 229. And that book's available on Amazon and many other outlets. But here we are in the year 2020. And that book came out in 2003. And the last, you know, 16, 17 years, I've walked around knowing every day that if you ever wanted to question what my life was like, or what my job was, or what I was doing in the war in Iraq, all you need to do is look at that book. And you see me crossing the bridge, still wearing my NBC suit, the nuclear, biological, and chemical suits, and carrying my trusty M249 past a dead body laying on that bridge. For pulling down Saddam's statue, a unit was awarded the Presidential Unit Citation the puck, and we were awarded by being one of the first units to be able to return home to the States, to our base in 29 Palms, California. That'll conclude this episode. Salute.
Let's go to war!
Hey, welcome back to the War Dog Trail. This is episode 10. About to get explicit. I'm about to get explicit and X-rated in this motherfucking episode. Mostly because I'm in a lot of physical pain at the moment. Today we're going to talk about post-war injuries. And the need to never explain yourself to any civilian that's never left this country with a gun in their hands. A lot of motherfuckers talk. If they were in the war, they do this shit. They do that shit. Truth is, most of them are too weak to even run with your crew. Specifically with me and my grunts, man. Most motherfuckers that talk shit about how they would fight, how they would scrap and kill, how tough they swear they are, how deep their knuckle game is and all this shit. Most of that shit don't mean a motherfucking thing to a Marine on the front lines. Especially if you put 2 or 3 tours down as a grunt every day, walking the streets, dodging landmines, IEDs, car bombs, everything in between. Any post-war injury that you have, as a war veteran, I don't want you to ever feel the need to explain yourself to anyone else in this world about what you deal with, what you go through, what you have been through, except another war veteran. You peep gang, we tracking. Say that one more time. Any motherfucker that has never left this country, man, woman, boy, child, with a gun in their hands, can never, ever say shit about you and what you deal with. Whether that be mentally, physically, socially, psychologically, financially, spiritually. Hell, you name it, man. I wish someone would have told me this when I first came off active duty at age 22. Remember, I told you when I left this country for Iraq the first time, with my M249 machine gun in my motherfucking hands, I was 18. So by the time I was 22, I can't explain to you, man, what my mindset was. While everyone else might have been learning, you know, peace, school, love, happiness, compassion, after the ages 18, 19, 20, 21, it was us in the infantry or your special ops guys within the special operations community. We walk a different line, and we always have. But I didn't know that when I first finished my first active duty time and ended up going to undergrad at UCL. First problem I ran into was with the security company I worked with overnight. I'd attend college during the day full time, work armed or unarmed security overnight. Hell, I wasn't sleeping much anyway. Who can after 3 tours in the war? Because remember, in the infantry, man, we grind all day and all night. You always need somebody out there, whether it's on foot, in a vehicle, in a Humvee. Someone flying around in the birds and a helicopter choppers up. Anyway, I didn't understand how little some civilians know about the work we put in as Marine riflemen at a young age. My first security job, I worked with an older gentleman, might have been 50, in his early 50s. One night, he had the nerve to ask me whether or not I was, one, afraid to be out at the property that I was protecting, which happened to have a few hundred vehicles on it, and which occasionally people might try to break into for parts, especially airbags, man. And secondly, he asked me, was I afraid to be there at night? All right. And yeah, I give it to you, man. In most places in society, age, that motherfucking age factor means something, right? Because someone else is older, you're younger. I have no problem with that aspect of it. I have no problem giving respect, following, learning, constructive criticism, the whole nine. But what some don't understand is that at 17 and 18, you can have as much, if not more, training than your local SWAT team has. So when that motherfucker asked me that, and I started picturing, for one, can I handle, you know, working this site? And young man, can you handle that pistol? Motherfucker, do you even know what I do for a living? Where I just came from? Can you motherfucking handle it? Your weak bitch ass handle the hundreds of miles, thousands of miles that I patrol on foot? Huh? Do you even know how you will react under fire, motherfucker? Ask me about operating at night. That's all we do is hunt at night, remember? We're armed with night vision goggles and thermals so we can see a motherfucker's body heat. Think I wasn't putting in work with that shit? First wave into fucking Baghdad. First wave of Marine grunts into Baghdad. First wave of Marine grunts to assault Fallujah in April 04. Mind you, talking about Operation Vigilant Resolve. This is the first hit in Fallujah in April. After they murdered the Blackwater contractors, tied their bodies to the trucks and drugged their torsos up and down the street, and then hung them on the bridge and set them on fire. If I wasn't afraid to deal with those motherfuckers, why would this dude think, because he's 50 or so, that it would at all bother me to be in a safe-ass zone where I don't have to worry about IEDs, indirect fire, snipers? It was that age factor, man. That's what it was, to be real with you. But the truth is, man, it's the young people that run front lines of the war. Those that are young enough, healthy enough. And don't get it twisted. This has nothing to do with one of those situations like, oh, I didn't know the war would be this, or I didn't know combat would be that. Every motherfucker in the infantry knows what time it is, 24/7. And once bodies start dropping, whether it's friends or enemy, give a good goddamn what another motherfucker thinks about your grind. Now, I didn't know that back then when I was 22. There's a couple ways you could react to that type of shit, right? You could say nothing and just take the motherfucker out, right? Could give him just a quick one or two, knock him unconscious, right? You could verbally spit back at the motherfucker, let him know that his weak motherfucking ass wouldn't even ever be qualified to run with your kind of killers. You dig? Couldn't handle it physically, all the physical requirements for one to be a Marine, for two to be an infantry Marine. I don't believe in having to prove anything to civilians anymore. because I know that most of what they say, they speak out of not knowing. You know 9 out of 10 of them never fucking left this country with a weapon in their hands. Most of them, even if someone ran up on them, you know, to attempt to kill them, might not be able to defend themselves. So why the fuck would I give a fuck about their opinion? Especially when it comes to, let's say, your post-war injuries, right? Motherfucker don't understand what you went through, and they weren't to your left or your right while you were grinding in the war, anywhere, any country, Iraq, Afghanistan, any other, you know, secret, unknown, black bag, black ops type of shit. The motherfucker wasn't there to your left or your right. Do not waste your time trying to explain yourself, trying to explain who you are, why you are the way you are. You hold that down. You keep that together. You wait till you come running to motherfuckers like me. The real ones. The ones that put in work, that have confirmed kills, that do go in motherfuckers' houses on the regular. Because I'll understand you. When you tell me, hey, you get excruciating migraines and headaches, I'm going to understand that shit and never need to question you. Because I know the kind of indirect fire you were around. I know about being fired at by mortars, artillery rounds, obviously AKs, RPGs. Motherfuckers don't know what it's like to have bombs blow near them, most of them. And the rest don't know that we don't use, you know, ear protection during in combat most of the time. Why? Because we need to speak to each other. We need to operate. Tell me your eardrums are blowing like mine, and that you suffer from the pain of nonstop tinnitus ringing because your eardrums are blown. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go ahead and one up on that and say that I believe that it might be just one factor in why so many veterans commit suicide. Because their ears hurt, man, and nobody sees it. Nobody understands it. And the motherfuckers who tell you and think they know so much about shooting, fighting, gun ranges, even though they tell you they've been in country, man. You ask a motherfucker what his job is, what his job title is, so you check the motherfucker on point. If his shit didn't say something like machine gunner, rifleman, sniper, mortarman, something that clearly explains that he put in work on a physical level, and that he understands that firing hundreds, thousands of rounds from his own weapon can damage his eardrums. Or you come out, you know, whether it's IED burns, blasts, losing buddies. Yes, I've lost buddies to car bombs. Yes, I've even seen female Marines hurt, killed. Left a black spot on the road from a car bomb taking 5 of them out. Whether I'm talking about the pain that hits me on the top of my head, my 2 damaged ears, painful and blown eardrums, or my left MCL, which I tore during my 3rd tour during a night op on a night patrol in Fallujah back in 2005. Initially, I didn't know how to handle explaining to other people that, hey, this is why I'm like this. Hey, this is why I'm like that. Because I've been through this. Because I've been through that. Because I've experienced this. I thought by providing that explanation, motherfuckers might have some insight into a world and a life outside of their own. But most won't. Most won't get it. Except the war dogs. And those that walk the war dog trail. Salute.
Let's go to war!
Welcome back to the War Dog Trail. This is episode 11. Past week, I've been in horrible pain dealing with tinnitus again, dealing with the ear ringing from having both of your eardrums blown from firing M249 light machine gun, thousands of rounds during the war. Hell, tomorrow's the Super Bowl. I'm probably going to have to watch it in silence. Read the damn captions. Having hearing conditions, hearing loss, eardrums that can hurt the drop of a hat at any moment's notice from any sound, makes it real hard to plan things for your life, for your day, for appointments, for schedules. Anything with a high pitch really, really fuck you up. Fuck up your whole day. My ears like this last time been ringing now for fuck 6 days straight. And now I'm not talking about itty bitty, you know, just a slight ring or just a slight whistling or no. I'm talking full volume, loud as shit, to the point that your eardrums truly hurt. Wind in the air hurts. Your air conditioning in your house on your ears hurts. Fans on your ears hurts. Letting your car window down hurts. Not to mention the shit so loud, you can't even fucking hear the people that are speaking to you. That's probably when I knew how bad and damaging tinnitus and that my ears were about 7 years ago. Yeah, I've been wearing hearing aids now for the past 7 years. These aren't just regular hearing aids, though. Not only do they have microphones to allow you to hear whatever you can't hear from hearing loss, mine specifically have what's called a tinnitus sound generator, which plays white noise in my ears 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Because my ears do not stop ringing 24 hours, 7 days a week. My ears have never stopped ringing over the past 7, 8 years. It's hard to explain that to anyone. How you look fine, or how you try to explain, you know, that, hey, I have ear pain. This says not anything compared to a little fucking earache. Alright, or the ear infection. No. Unless you have perforated, burst, or blown eardrums, you would not know what the fuck I'm talking about. Yes, I will give you that there are other industries, you know, industries that are constantly around not loud noises. You know, whether you're working at an airport, and you're around the planes, or you're around helicopters, the jets, the engines. But even then, you're given ear protection. You're usually wearing, you know, something, whether it's simple earplugs or full-on hearing aids. Or like right now, I'm in addition to my hearing aids playing this white noise, I'm also having pains from external noises. So I'm using the same type of earmuffs that you'd use at a gun range. This is what I have to walk around my house with when it's this bad. I will agree. If you work in any environment that is prone to loud noises, such as aviation and fixed wing or rotary engine, excuse me, fixed wing or rotary type of aircraft. If you're in the music industry, you definitely know what I'm talking about as far as the ear ringing and the pain. But the big ass difference here is that we're talking about kind of tinnitus that war veterans get. And there's a big goddamn difference. You shoot at people, buildings, vehicles with machine guns, fully automatic, such as the M249 squad automatic weapon, which I carried during my first two tours in Iraq, which I had as an 18-year-old when I left this country, which I had as a 19-year-old first day we crossed the border. Talking about a whole different level of pain, a whole different level of damage. This is not like what you see on movies or after explosions when you hear that slight ringing. For a few seconds, it disappears. No, this is that loud shit. This is that shit that's so loud that, like I said, 7 years ago, once I realized that I couldn't even hear my daughter speaking to me, that was when I guess I accepted how bad the damage was and is. And you know, like any other things with your body, it just deteriorates and gets worse over time. I know for a fact that the guys that work in the artillery field in the military, what we also call Artie, when they fire their weapons and support the grunts on the ground or any other operation where they're needed, I know their motherfucking ears hurt too. And if I haven't said it before, as of now, there is no cure for tinnitus. I've heard it over several years from audiologists that I have seen that both forms of the word are acceptable, whether it's tinnitus or tinnitus. And you fire automatic weapons for a living, you're dealing with a whole nother world of straight up pain. Now, last year was the first time most of military guys were seeing or becoming informed of the tinnitus class action lawsuit over earplugs that were issued to some guys. Tell you straight up, man, when the war jumped off in 2003, and then the next times for me in 04 and 05, they weren't giving out those motherfucking earplugs, man, so I had nothing to do with us. Similar to the way that complaints were made about, you know, troops not having enough armor and plating on their vehicles and whatnot back in 2003 and 2004. Well, shit, those of us that went across the border, you know, we just went with what the fuck we had, right? No bitching or complaining about it. I mean, it's the armor we got. It's the armor we got. You roll. You go do your mission, man. Equally, I'm just throwing there real quick. It always blew me away that of all the years that the military existed, when I got there in 2002 was when the Marine Corps decided to change the uniforms over to the digital patterns, digicamis. When we crossed the border of Iraq, I want to say uniforms, at least with my unit, uniforms were probably the only thing that were not uniform amongst the entire group. You had some guys that still had, that might have had the old school chocolate chip desert camis from the Gulf War. Some of us had the tricolored. That you saw most military guys use when we across the border. But the digicamis were out, man, in 03, so there were a few, usually officers, that were there in the new camouflage and with the new desert boots that were issued. So that alone tripped me out. And no one back then was and wearing or looking as high speed, low drag as the operators look now, man. You look at most guys back then, we were still using 782 Deuce gear, man. But you bet your ass, we still got the job done. You still went where you needed to go. You still put motherfucking hurt on the enemy wherever you were sent to or assigned. Regardless of what the armor looked like, you still rode through areas with possible landmines or IEDs. So the fact that, you know, afterwards and years later, there are so many, you know, changes and improvements in the armor doesn't change the fact that at the beginning, that shit wasn't there. Not to say it wasn't needed, but it wasn't there, but it wasn't a problem because that was the norm. And, Marines don't usually bitch, aren't allowed to bitch most of the time. Just kind of bite your tongue and grind on. I told myself 7-8 years ago when I started wearing hearing aids that I refuse to learn sign language. And back then, I refused to even read the damn captions on TV shows and movies. Because I completely understood and accepted the fact that I could be killed, that I could be, you know, shot with an AK, hit with an RPG, hit by a landmine, hit with a grenade. But when I was lucky and blessed enough to walk out 3 tours as a infantry marine without having been hit, the fact that my little itty bitty ass ears were debilitating me this much just was hard to fathom and accept, wrap my head around. But this is for all of those veterans out there, especially the war veterans that suffer from nonstop tinnitus and the painful ringing of blown eardrums. Salute.
Let's go to war!
Welcome back to the War Dog Trail with Sergeant War Dog. This is episode 12. We're going to continue part 2 of discussing the issue of tinnitus or tinnitus. Constant painful ringing of your eardrums, usually due to gunshots, to being around when the airplanes drop danger close, which is within a few hundred yards of your position. I ask you to bear with me again in this episode because I'm in a lot of fucking pain from tinnitus again. The last 6 goddamn days straight, my ears would not stop ringing. And the whole nature of ear pain, blowing eardrums, you know how close your ears are to your brain, you know, your head. So naturally, tinnitus usually leads to some excruciating migraines. No, I'm not talking about your average or below the radar headache. And might not even be talking about your casual migraine. Oh, not at all. I had migraines before, even before the war. Yeah, I already know they could be debilitating, but you add tinnitus, you add the pain of your eardrums to any high-pitched sound, any female's voice that's high-pitched, any music happens to be high-pitched, any wind from outside, from lowering your car window, from a fan, from your own air condition. Hurts like a motherfucker. Now don't get me wrong. This is not an innate thing that I'll discuss. This is not about being a victim in any way. It's like I told you before, I chose to be an infantry marine, a grunt by choice. It's the only thing I could ever see myself doing. That lifestyle. If I was going to be a Marine. So, with making that decision, I fully accept any and everything that comes with being a grunt, with being a war veteran on the front lines. Whether that was to have my head blown off, to lose both of my legs, to have my torso blown across the street, and my legs blown on the other side of the street. I had to accept all of that shit, and I did. And we all do. And carry on anyway. Because that's what protecting this country requires at times. But I won't lie that I never anticipated my little itty bitty ass ears and eardrums being subject to so much pain. So much debilitating pain in a war veteran's life. Everything I discuss in any of these podcast episodes has not a goddamn thing to do with me. This is so that other war veterans worldwide can realize that they aren't alone and they're suffering. Anything I discuss, anything I go over, is to let the other men and women know that they aren't suffering alone, and that even though they're around thousands of civilians who don't deal with what they deal with, don't know or understand their lifestyle, you can know that a motherfucker like Sergeant War Dog does understand, alright? Whether that's by choice or not, can't say, but I do feel you like a motherfucker, man. I feel exactly where you come from. You don't need to explain shit to me about who you are, where you've been, why you are the way you are. Why you run into confusion and misunderstanding in your post-war life as you walk down your own war dog trail. And if I haven't mentioned it before, my trademark definition of a war dog, of a military war dog, because there are other groups, other units, there are bikers even. We use the term war dog. But I'm specifically referring to my own definition of what I call war dogs. And those are the people that have been through so much war that all they live, think, and know for certain it's war. Yeah, you could say, oh, you're just talking about PTSD or some shit like that. But I'm not coming at it from that approach. I'm coming at it from the approach of being an infantry marine on the front lines. During the first day, obviously, in Iraq, as well as again in 04 and again in 05. Where all you truly were involved in, whether it was training or was actually being in country, was true warfare. Quickly, I want to go over some tinnitus solutions. There are no cures for tinnitus at this time. I have seen pills and medications that could help. Didn't work for me. The greatest remedy or form of relief that I was able to find was with the hearing aids that happen to have tinnitus sound generators built in them that play white noise 24/7. And the white noise does not completely remove the ringing, because there is no cure, as I said. So, yeah, the last 7-8 years of shit, the last 10 years, my pains went from just slight whistling every once in a while to just slight ringing every once in a while to every goddamn day. And there are times, though, that even the hearing aids are not enough. Even the white noise is not enough. And I have to depend on apps that are meant to help those with hearing loss or hearing conditions. I primarily use an app called Brainwave Tuner and another app called White Noise, because both offer sounds and levels of certain sounds, certain pitch, certain decibel levels that mask the ringing. And when I say mask, what I mean is the entire condition of tinnitus, from what I've learned over these past 8-10 years, is that your brain will think that you hear sound, or that it hears sound, because your eardrums are damaged, or there's some form of damage to the inner ear, but there actually is no sound. So you have to resort to your own, you know, remedies as any other illness or pain for what fits you individually. But bad days like today, or hell, the past 6 days in a row for me, when my hearing aids aren't enough, and the levels of, you know, changing the volumes on the white noise to try to mask that ringing. And again, like when I mention masking, what I'm saying is the ringing pin can be at one level or one volume. You need to be able to have a sound that matches that level and probably exceeds it a little bit to, in order to help alleviate the pain, for one, and then to also allow you to hear. So with my daily masking for my hearing aids, my levels are set so that, like I said, they reach the level of my own hearing, of my own ringing, so that the pain, you know, can die down. And then the fact that, you know, all hearing aids are made with microphones, that allows you to hear over the ringing so that you can still hear someone speaking to you and still hear music. But there are days, like I've been going through these past 6-7 days straight, where you can't find relief. You can go back and forth between apps, hearing aids, covering your ears. Before I got hearing aids, I used to try all sorts of things, man. I was dunking my head in, sinks full of water, trying to get the ears to pop, chewing gum like you would on a plane, just any and everything. I know specifically during the war, a few times when my ears did ring so loud at the time that I couldn't hear guys or other Marines talking to me. It usually happened when we were about to make a dynamic entry into a house or a room and you ran into a locked door and someone might come from behind you with a 12 gauge or a rifle and blow the door, shoot the door at its hinges and knock it off. And that proximity, man, them being that close to you, there are a few times when, like I said, I could not hear a damn thing. I heard the loud ringing, and then I heard complete silence. I looked around and saw, the lips of the other guys trying to speak to me, but I couldn't hear them for shit. So all I could do was continue to carry my M249 machine gun and follow the group, follow the crew, try to help in any way possible.
Steve Jeans, that's what it is.
Salute.
All I know is war. All I know is shoot. All I want is more, but I got some things to do. I'm a dog of war. Hell's what I've been through. I'm a dog of war. I did it all for you.
DVD Radio.